Welcome, everybody, to the R&R CatCast, a fan-based podcast focusing on Montana State athletics. We're two dudes named Ryan from the state of Washington talking about our dear Montana State. We hope you enjoy.
Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning, Bobcat Nation. This is another episode of Brickball, an R&R production, and once again, no Ryan's on this podcast tonight. I gotta get my own intro now, because that's just becoming misleading. Tonight, I have a special guest. I've been looking forward to do this for a while. Somebody I'd now call a friend, a texting buddy for a while, but Keaton Galogli, the voice of the Bobcats. How you doing, man?
I'm feeling good, feeling rested. It's amazing what 8 hours of sleep can do to you.
You just gotta be going for... What is it? You start in like August and then it's just nonstop sprint.
Yeah, pretty much.
Months.
Yeah. It's like 8 straight months. I got into sports because I didn't want to work 9 to 5. So now I work 24/7 and it's phenomenal. Wouldn't trade for anything in the world.
You got kind of like teacher hours sometimes. So it's kind of funny. But hey, summertime.
What I had before I got here.
All right, man. So I want to start this off because I've been fascinated by this story. I thought it was absolutely insane. We've joked about it a couple times now, but I wanted to make it more public that you called, I think it was the Cal victory. Was it in the Cal game? And then you had a little trouble getting to the Brawl football game. You want to just go through that whole experience for us? Because I'm just fascinated by this thing.
Yeah. All right. So travel to the broadcast world can be a little funky from time to time. This was actually not too bad on paper for what I had, because always once basketball football season starts to cross over, it gets a little crazy. You know, there's a lot of 6 a.m. flights. There's, a lot of 4 hour sleep nights or whatever, and just cramming and doing whatever you got to do. So this one was actually all right. Right. So I met the team. I flew out to Berkeley the day of the game. Against Cal, because we had our last cat chat the night before. So we had cat chat on Wednesday night over at B-Dubs. We do that, you know, with Viggs and the guys and whatever. I had an early flight, the first flight out in the morning after that. So already didn't have a lot of sleep that night, but that's, again, just the way it goes. Fly out, met the team at Shoot Around, and we did the game, and they won. Unfortunately, Patrick McMahon got hurt in that game, but still an historic moment and really awesome and really the first signature win of the Logie era, which would obviously have multiple signature wins this year, which was awesome. Anyway, do the game. So that was a Thursday night, and I had a flight out on Friday. Now, there's always a question on this stuff, on how early a flight you should be taking on these. I did not take the first flight out that was going to be at like 8 o'clock or something, because the Cal game was like an 8 p.m. tip off Pacific time. So it was a late night already. And I already didn't have much sleep because I had slept, come in on the day of. So I was flying out that afternoon ish and I was like, all right, cool. You know, I'll get into Missoula about like, I don't know, like 7 or 8 o'clock, you know, whatever. It's a noon game the next day. So that's, you know, as early as it gets. So, you know, whatever. Anyway, take my Uber over to the airport. Everything's all hunky dory. I'm on time. I got enough sleep. I even got a workout in that morning. I get on the plane. No big deal. I'm sitting on the tarmac. And we end up sitting there for like 2 hours. And the reason we sat there was not a mechanical issue or anything else. It was that big summit, whatever they had in San Francisco in November. I don't remember what it was, like the CPAC or I don't know what it was. But anyway, all the dignitaries that were in town in San Francisco that week were flying out that afternoon on that Friday. So they shut down the whole airport traffic for like 2 hours while we're sitting on the tarmac. And we fly to Denver. We finally get off and I'm looking at the clock. I'm like, man, I might miss my connection in Denver. Like, that's going to really screw me. So we land in Denver. I hustle over and try to see if it's there, and it's not. They didn't hold it. I missed the connection by, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes. Like, not that much time. And of course, it's a flight to Missoula. So like, the next flight out to Missoula from Denver wasn't until like 9 or 10 o'clock the next morning. So I go to customer service. All right, what can we do? All right, how are we going to do this? Because now I'm like, look, I knew this was kind of coming as I'm sitting on the plane, so I'm not really like worried yet. And I'm talking to the customer service lady, who was very helpful and very, very understanding. And we're looking, how close can we get me to Missoula? You know, games at noon. I had scheduled to do my pregame interview with Vegan at like 8 a.m. or whatever it was. So that was kind of where I felt like I needed to get in, because obviously I don't want to throw off his schedule for the day. And all right, well, we'll see. You know, okay, we're looking. Can't get me anywhere. And she was looking at, you know, all the airports that were relatively nearby. So eventually we figured out, and it's like 8 or 8:30 at night at this time, the closest she can get me is Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Yeah. Luckily it was a light winter, right? Because that drive from Salt Lake to Missoula could definitely be pretty snowy.
It can
snowy
be
on the 15th.
Hairy. Yeah.
Yes. So, all right, you can get me to Salt Lake City and I can rent a car. Okay. There's a flight that's leaving in 20 minutes. That'll take me to Salt Lake City. So it's like 8:30, 9 o'clock at that time. Yeah. All right. Well, I hope, I was like, you sure my gear is going to get flipped over, my baggage? She was like, no, I guarantee it's going to be on there. I was like, okay, sweet. So I make a few phone calls as I'm waiting that 30 minutes, letting RJ know and letting Lamberty know and, you know, letting my general manager, Roger Wexerbrook, know, hey, you know, this is the situation. Here's what's happening. I'm going to get there, but like, this is going to be tight. So I get on the Salt Lake plane. I hadn't had any caffeine that day yet. So I was like, all right, good. That's a good thing. I knew this was a trip I needed a lot of sleep on. So I had a neck pillow and an eye mask. And I closed my eyes as much as I could on that flight from to Salt Lake from Denver. So get there, and then I got to rent a car. And, you know, I land at like 11:15, and I'm waiting for my gear. And I'm like waiting because it got put in the oversized stuff. So I had to wait for it to come out with like all where all the skis and stuff come.
Yep.
And I go over, and they're like, it's definitely here. It's been scanned, and it is in Salt Lake. It's just the conveyor belt, yada, yada, yada. It takes a lot of time. So I waited like 30, 35 minutes for my gear. And I'm wondering, all right, do I got to call Riley Cochran, the radio guy for Missoula? You know, do I have to call this, that? Like, do I need to borrow some gear somewhere? But I'm like, no, they say it's here, so it's going to be here. Anyway, so finally gets there, and all the rental car stuff closes like midnight. So it finally rolled out at like 11:45 or something like that. I go down, I just walk up to the first one in Enterprise, and, hey, yo, what's up? You got anything? I need a one-way to Missoula. So, this guy comes back and he's like, yeah, I got one that's available for a one way to Missoula. How do you feel about a convertible?
It's like planes, trains, and automobiles at this point. Just, the radio
works.
If
it's going to get me there, man, I'm down. So again, this is why part of the reason it was so good that the weather wasn't too bad. I was like, all right, great. He's cool. I got a Mustang for you. Sweet. All right, whatever. I don't care. I'm not a big car guy. I drive a 2002 yeah. Chrysler minivan. Like, cool. You got a Mustang for me? I don't care. So, we do all the sign up. I walk down. It's like a little bit of a ways to get down there. And I pass like three different like people that are working for Enterprise. And they're like, oh, are you the Mustang guy? Oh, are you the convertible guy? I'm like, why does everybody know I'm driving this convertible?
Convertible.
I walk down there and I figure out why once I get there. It was like this electric blue Mustang. It was like this royal electric blue that they gave me. And I was like, all right, sweet. I punch it in. I got on the road by like midnight. And I was like, great. I got my interview with Vegan or whatever it was. I said 8 or 7:30 in the morning. I was like, this is going to get me there right in time. I kind of posted about it. and so Vegan texted me at like 7 a.m. He's like, you going to make it? Cause his wife had seen on Instagram that I was doing this drive. Cause all this happened at like midnight, like 12:30. And I'm like posting a little bit here and there, but like, if you're getting ready for the game, that's a noon kickoff. Like you're asleep at midnight, or at least you should be.
Yep.
So I got it. I got in and started the drive. And some context to this too is it felt like, first of all, I'm from Chicago, so very, very much a Blues Brothers moment. You know, sunglasses, half pack of smokes, and you know, whatever. It's dark. We're gonna make this drive. I was not smoking, but anyway. So you know, and I had done a lot of cross. I'd done a cross country drive twice a year from East Lansing to Modesto, California for 9 years. So I've done a lot of long drives. So I was like, all right, great. I feel like everything in my life has led to this moment where I know how to drive from midnight to 7 a.m. to get to Missoula. And every time I got tired, I just thought of what it would feel like to miss that game in that moment. I'm driving and I'm cruising. And at 3 o'clock in the morning after I passed the Montana border, a Lamborghini got on the road. And so we were able to drive together at a specific speed, which was very, very helpful. And I get closer, and you know, as you're on the 90, everybody here has done it now, but you know, as you kind of come around the corner and the bend there, and you kind of Missoula appears, the sun had just not quite started coming up, but the sky had started to change colors, and that day was really, really foggy, remember? And the lights were on at the stadium, and so it was about 7 a.m. The sun hadn't come up yet, but the sky was changing, and the lights were on at the stadium, and you know, you could see that so quickly and easily as you're coming in, and it was illuminating all the fog, and I just like, it just hit me, and I was like, oh my God, I'm gonna make it. Like, I'm gonna make it. And so I pulled into the hotel, and RJ was up already, and I met Vegan for the interview. He knocked out the interview, and I went up, and RJ was like, you need anything? I was like, no, I think I'm good. And I showered. Right. Yeah, I showered, and I sat on the bed for like 30 minutes, and then I came downstairs, and you know, usually myself and Dan Davies and our engineer Dylan McPhail and Lamberty and our analysts, we'll all drive over together, but we kind of broke it up a little bit on this trip, and RJ came back to the hotel, and we got in the car, and I showed up a little later than I usually do, but he had picked me up a breakfast sandwich, which was amazing. And we stopped and grabbed a cup of coffee and cold brew, and we went over to the game, and we got it settled in, and I was pretty tired, but you know, we did the open, and thank goodness we have an engineer in Dylan who can handle all of the nitty gritty of things and setting up the gear. So hit the open, and then, you know, I'd have some recorded stuff in there. So I kind of closed my eyes in the booth for like 10 minutes, and then somebody popped in because they wanted to say hello, and I said hello, and then kickoff happened, and we got it done, and we did the game, and it didn't go the way we wanted to, but I still wouldn't trade it for anything. And Mr. Davies drove the Mustang back, and I slept in it. I went in and out of sleep as we listened to the Washington Huskies football game on the way back, and got back later that night, returned the rental car, and then I went to sleep, and we awaited the selection show the next day. It was a lot, but it was
that's a weird like 48 hours, but oh man, like, you go from the highs of highs with Logie and like that win and what it meant at the moment, and be like, oh my goodness, like, what's this team going to be this year? And then you go to that game, the biggest brawl ever, as is kind of touted,
right?
And then
that's really what it was,
just kind of what happened. Oh man, that just
I know,
still, but still drives me crazy. We got it done, and it was just a crazy football season. Just, it's going to be interesting. Kind of leads me into my next question: is, you've been on the job now for 2 years, and you've seen some insane stuff. Like, yeah, did you imagine, like, you got to see a college game day, a conference title in football, another run to the semifinals, a negative, what was the Brookings game? A negative, like, basically 30-degree
like
wind chill?
Nine or something. Negative six or negative nine. It was not negative 30, but it's just the humidity in South Dakota and the wind is so much different than it is out here. But yeah, it was like negative nine or something at first kick.
Yeah. And then you go and cover, you know, a Danny Sprinkle team that makes yet another run to the tournament. And this year happens, and the craziness with the football games and just some insane ones back to Brookings. And how has it been being 2 years? Is it anything like, has there anything like unexpected happened? Obviously there's just been some crazy games that you've gotten to call for the Bobcats, but when you took the job 2 years ago, what were you kind of expecting versus what is it kind of been?
Yeah. I mean, in a lot of ways it has been kind of what I expected. The amount of moments we have had is crazy. And I just want to make sure people know that I don't take that for granted. Like, I obviously the Cubs have won a World Series at this point, but I was a long suffering Cubs fan. I'm a Bears fan, so I've had a lot of suffering. You know, like there's definitely a kinship there. Like, being a Cats fan is hard. Like,
yeah,
it is not easy, and it includes a lot of heartbreak, and I respect that deeply. And that means that I am not for a moment, even though I just got here, taking this for granted. At all. This is a very specific moment in time in Bobcat history. But I had expectations of people really caring and the program being a very good program, win, lose, or draw. I've had a couple of people that I've known who have been the women's radio voice here. Adam Seidel was here back in like 2012 or 13 or something like that. A couple of my friends at Michigan State, the SIDs over there, they actually grew up in Billings, and so they were Montana State fans. You know, I had some friends who have worked pro ball out here, both in Billings and Helena and in Great Falls. Jared Sandler worked in Great Falls. He's the Rangers radio guy now. So I've known a lot of people who have kind of come through here through the broadcasting ranks. So I did have a decent sense. I've driven through Montana and through Bozeman a couple of times on some of those cross country drives. So I had a decent sense of what it would be, but yeah, nobody could know what we've had the opportunity to experience here over the last 2 years. I mean, it's just, I definitely feel very, very lucky about that.
I made the jokes in Boise this year. I don't think I told you this, but I said, somebody out there, a blood pressure medication company, has got to sponsor Bobcat Athletics at this point, because from what happened in the tournament this year to basically all of football season last year, like, I don't think my heart can take it. Like, I'm expecting an early death at this point without it happens. Like,
yeah.
You ask me
as long as they win, I'll trade an early death. That's all I care. That's all that matters.
I think a lot of Cubs fans would have traded that a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I would have traded a lot of things for that.
Yeah, I'm a long-suffering Rockies fan, so.
Oh, I mean, I'm sorry, they're playing. Yeah,
they're playing the Cubs right now. It's not going good. I have no expectations. I watched almost every game in 2017, 2018 when they were at least a playoff team, but it's not even worth it at this point. They're not putting a product up. I love baseball too. That's the hard thing. That's one of the things I brought this up too. Is Bozeman needs like some kind of minor league baseball or something, because I feel like we'd be a pretty good minor league town.
With the summers here. We're in a baseball desert here. That was kind of one of the stinks. Things. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it would obviously fit into the Indie Ball Pioneer League pretty easily, but you know, you'd need a facility and it is a lot of work. And, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people are out doing the outdoorsy stuff, you know, at that point in the summer. But yeah, I mean, I would love it. I'd be all about it. That would be great. But yeah, I mean, it would definitely fit with the Billings and the Great Falls and all that stuff. So
anyway, all my side tangents, people are used to that at this point. My next kind of thing that I have is, you've now coached two very successful, very different basketball coaches, you've called two very different basketball coaches. What was the biggest difference between Sprinkle to Logie? I've asked this to a couple of people now and I've gotten some different answers, but when I saw, because I always sat on the other side of the court from the bench, and Logie always has his like arms crossed, looks very like intent. Like, he doesn't do a lot like during the game, but when it comes to a timeout or something like that, he comes off the floor just flying. Like, he has just an energy to him, where Danny just, I feel like, always had an energy to him.
Yeah.
And so that was what I noticed this year. And like, it was very meticulous. Like, it just felt like Logie was thinking way more, like the wheels were turning of what he was going to do. You were on the road with him a lot. What was kind of that biggest difference that you're like, wow, this is different than last year?
Yeah. You know, I think for Logie too, this year was such a specific year in terms of what the challenges were at the beginning of the year. Daniel Sally, the women's radio broadcaster, he and I talked about it at the beginning of the year, like, this was going to be a basketball junkies year. You know, this was a year where if you really loved basketball, there was going to be a lot for you. But if you were kind of just a casual, you may not really see what was happening. I think that's exactly how it played out, the way it grew. And so for Logie, like, you know, he had a lot of perspective. You know, he knew the hand he was dealt. He knew what his personnel was, and his goal was to get the most out of that personnel. And so you had to kind of wear a few losses. I mean, that was the nature of the beast. Well, Sprinkle, by the end of his time, he had the target on his back, you know, and there were a lot of expectations there. So I think the context there is important. But as you get into, like, you know, watching them coach and how they interact with their players, you know, Sprinkle was a little bit more on like the Tom Izzo side of things, you know, where he's going to coach you really, really hard. You know, he's got a little red ass to him. You know what I mean? And he proves it, right? The only way you can coach players like that today is if they really believe that you have their best interests, and he truly loves his players. But he coaches hard, and Logie also coaches hard, but from a little bit more of a place of like love, a little bit more of like that fatherly kind of vibe, you know? And I assume that's a little bit of the influence of his grandfather, being a high school coach. So there's a little bit more, and I don't want this to sound like I'm belittling it anyway, but a little bit more of that high school kind of vibe where it's like, I'm going to really have a lot of patience and I'm going to explain things in a different way. While Sprinkle was really kind of, I compare him to Izzo in the way he would ride you, you know, and guys responded to it. And that's a credit to him and the staff for recruiting the right guys. And the only reason you can do that successfully is because they believe you care about them. But yeah, I would say Logie just had a little bit more of that softer touch, and Sprinkle was definitely a little bit of a sharper touch.
Yeah, I'd wonder if that's, you know, making your way through the D3 ranks and then the D2 ranks and just having to deal with that player development. You got to do it, you know, quite a bit. You got to find diamonds in the rough. Shout out to one of my buddies, Ben College, who I went to high school with. And Ben was by no means our best player in high school. We had a really good high school team that should have won a state title my junior year. But Ben went up to Whitworth and played for Logie. And when Logie got hired, I texted Ben and I said, hey, like, what's this guy about? What, you know, what are we getting as a basketball coach? And he said, Matt Logie's the greatest coach I've ever had. He whipped me into shape. He, you know, was patient with me. And now Ben's playing college ball overseas. And Logie told me, he goes, I don't coach a lot of dudes in the D3 ranks that even get any sort of pro career. So yeah, that was one of the stories that I learned this year that I thought was super awesome. Is just, I got to talk to the current coach at Whitworth quite a bit in Boise, and just kind of the care that was there too. And that development is, it's definitely a different mindset, but it was very interesting to see that love and care and, you know, that development side of things, which was awesome. And yeah,
excuse me,
but yeah, just,
yeah,
so
the development
crazy.
Piece, the development piece is a big piece. That's the developing a player is a bigger pitch for Logie than it is most coaches. And I'm sure that part of that comes from the D2, D3 stuff is like, hey, yeah, you can go to a higher level. You can go to X, Y, and Z, but if you come here, guarantee you're going to be a better player leaving here than you would be leaving there. And I think that's a big part of their pitch. And that's definitely a part of coming up through the D2, D3 ranks. And, you know, yeah, he came up through those, but he chose to go to that, right? Like Sprinkle and Logie chose two different things. Sprinkle spent over a decade as an assistant coach, working his tail off, doing all the grunt work, right? And, you know, living in small apartments and not making a lot of money. And Logie went down
to the D3 level. That's an insane story. That's right. Like that Sprinkle press conference he did at UW was insane.
Right. Was, you know, and they went two different routes. And it's just, it's one of those things where, you know, to each his own, and it's hard. But yeah, I mean, it seems like such a flash in the pan, and like both these guys have come up so quickly, but having grinded the way they've grinded, it is not. They preparation meets opportunity. That's what luck is.
Yep. Yeah. I still can't believe this season. I've said it a ton, but the guys looked at me weird, and I came on here and they hired me for this year. And my first episode on here, I said a great year. And my expectation for this team is we should be a semifinal team at Boise. I was like, if we get to a semifinal in Boise, I think that's a really good year. And I think that's something we're very capable of. And they both looked at me like, seriously, dude, that, and then to go all the way and win it. I mean, obviously some things fell our way, but roller coaster. I think you said it right about how things went and how like it was not a casual season. You had to be involved. You had to get to know names, and a great year to start this little endeavor. But there was weeks on here for 2 weeks where I was like, I do not want to record an episode because I have nothing good to talk about. But
yeah,
you were on the road with them. What was, you know, the mood? I mean, how did they swing this thing around? Because they came home and they beat Weber, and that just kind of sparked them into it. But what did they do during the downtime where they were, I think they lost what, 4 or 5 in, towards the end of the year, and it just kind of looked like they were cooked, to be kind of blunt. What did they do to fix that or turn around?
Yeah, that was one of the questions I asked multiple guys after the championship on the postgame show, because I thought that was the most interesting thing I was trying to get at the end of the year, because they beat Eastern Washington at home, and that was awesome. And he felt like, all right, here we go. And then, yeah, it was 4 straight, including that devastating loss at Portland State. You know, those were, that was tough, man. It was hard. But you know, there was just a lot of faith, you know, and credit to Rob Ford, because he was one of the guys who it's all about just coming into practice that next day. That was everything everybody talked about, how you coming into practice the next day, because there's nothing to do when you lose like that, and you lose in the painful way that they lost over and over and over again. They're not going to cancel the games. Nobody's going to say, oh, gee, golly, sorry. Like, we'll just sit our better player. The schedule still plays. There's still basketball to be played. Like, you can check out, fine, but it's only going to get worse. The only thing you can do, the only thing that's there, the only thing that matters, showing up to work and showing up to practice and going back to work is the only thing you could do. And that's what they did. And that's what Rob did. And that's what these guys did. And, you know, that was part of the context I was talking about with Logie, too. Like, the staff knew. Like, obviously, they wore these losses. But at the same time, like, you can't just like blow it all up. There were so many different times. There was only, I mean, I think only after the South Dakota State game was one of the only times I heard Logie really like coach these guys hard. I mean, he spent time before the first conference game at Idaho State in the shoot around, going around and pointing out something to everybody about like building their confidence, like why they're good, why they're here, and why you're doing what you're doing. And so he spent a lot of time building up that confidence. And you know, when you coach a guy hard, you know, it can be tough because you're tearing them down a little bit, and that works in a lot of ways. But I don't know that would have worked this season, because you had like the season's going to tear you down. It's up to the coach to build you up, and that's what they did. And they just that's the belief and the trust they had in Logie. And it sounds a little cliche, and it sounds a little like, you know, whatever, hunky dory. But they believed in Coach Logie's process, and they continued to go to work. And they were able to bounce back, and eventually it all came together in one of the more miraculous, surreal runs we've seen.
The moment I think about that I was like, ooh, that's kind of weird, and I wonder what your opinion was when we lost at home to Sac in that really disappointing game, and he gets on the post game, and did he say about 7 words to you of, this is an embarrassment, I'm sorry, this is not good, and just left. I was like, yeah, that was pretty much it. But there was a spark there too. It was like, hey, and the other thing was, we were pondering too, from being fans, at least the fan side of things, is the only way you get to the tournament, and Eastern's learned this the hard way the last 2 years, the only way you get there is winning the conference tournament. And we kind of had the thought of, Logie knew that no matter what, they were a play-in team at best for Dayton. That was the best, that was the ceiling of this team. So when we lost the game to Rocky that everybody kind of crucified us for, when we lost some of those games early, I just kept thinking, he's trying to figure out rosters. He's trying to figure out rotations. He's trying to figure out minutes. He's trying to figure out schemes. And I don't know why John Olmstead didn't play as much during the year, but boy, he became a big contributor at the end. But my kind of thought was, he just tinkered most of the season to figure out what he had, because I don't think he knew what he had.
No, I mean, he came in so late, it was hard. And, you know, for the Olmstead thing, like, you know, they saw some of that in practice, but it just was not translating to games. You know, he just, it wasn't translating. He wasn't doing what he needed to do to be on the floor while he was on the floor. And he continued to work hard in practice, but just wasn't there. And eventually it was, and it kind of took over. It
came at the best time.
Yeah. And even Logie was kind of like, man, was I doing something wrong not playing him? But no, they have their process, and he, the what he was doing in practice was not translating to the games when they put him in. It just was not translating, and eventually it did. But yeah, you know, Logie was a true professional through all of that, which is really, really hard. I've worked with a lot of coaches at this point in my career, and he was a true professional in all of that. And look, it that stunk. He's never lost this much in his career. And so he was dealing with a lot of stuff too. And also to not, you can't just take it out on your team. You can't just be frustrated and scream at your team. That's not going to work. You have to like internalize
it. Wasn't their fault too.
Right.
Yeah, so, that was the biggest thing. It's like, it's not these guys' fault.
And it turns out that Sac State loss wasn't as bad as we thought it was, because Sac State turned out to be good at that point. That was when they had started to turn the corner. That was when they snapped the losing streak, but they had already changed their rotation to get to where they were. That included the upset of Eastern. So that loss at the moment stunk, but at the same time, in hindsight, they were a semifinal team when they were playing Montana State that day.
The Idaho loss was way worse looking back at it.
That one really hurt. That one stunk.
That one was... Sour.
They were gassed. They were just gassed after the Eastern game, and they struggled to continue the success. How do you build off the success? That was a theme all year long until we finally got to the tournament, and it was just hard. You know, it just, there was so much X's and O's that had to happen this year for things to go right, and when you had a week to prepare, the guys were just better, and the rotation was short, and so, you know, I think we went something like 1-6 on Saturday in Big Sky Conference play.
Yep. Yeah, you never knew what you were going to get on Saturday. It felt like they'd play a pretty good game on Thursday, and then Saturday was just like, well, here we go. But yeah, it's just a roller coaster. And I'll just kind of skip to this at this point. What's your opinion of Boise? Because this is my second year I've done the Boise trip. My dad gets a house. We go down there. It's a great kind of reunion. You get to meet a lot of people. You get to talk to everybody in the conference, it seems like. But I love that. I love the arena. I just love the Boise idea of it.
Yeah, it is a little tough to get to. It's a long drive.
Yep.
But
that's right. You have to drive it. I fly.
we have flown. Well, we can either fly or drive. Well, depending on our stuff, like because we flew my first year, and that was like a 5:30 or 5:45 a.m. flight to get down to Salt Lake. Like it was the same amount of travel time as it was busing, because I was on the bus with the guys.
Yep.
But once you get past the travel, because it's going to be tough for everybody, No, I love it. Everybody can walk to everywhere. The broadcasters usually get together. I absolutely love that we do the women's games and the men's games the same day. Like, it's so much fun. It brings everybody together. It allows me to get to know a lot of the women's broadcasters and people around the women's programs. And obviously, you know, I follow the women's program as close as I do anything else. So the opportunity to be there and help out Daniel a little bit on some of his stuff. It's phenomenal. That arena is the absolute perfect size for what we have. There's so much room for operations for us down on the floor since it's a hockey arena. We got a lot of room, which is really, really helpful. I love it. I mean, I wouldn't trade it for anything else. And I hope it continues to build because it is just the right size arena, just the right size town where we can go get some food. Things are open late and everybody can walk everywhere. I mean, I can just walk to the arena and I'm ready to go. So yeah, I love it. It's absolutely phenomenal.
That hotel bar is crazy. It's always crazy. The 2 years I've been there, it just seems you run into somebody every time and it's just always insane. But yeah, the women's part is an awesome thing too, because the last 2 years too, but our kind of thoughts was, you know, whatever Cats team goes further, we're going to be here till both Cats teams are done. And right. So that's kind of the cool thing is you got two options there. And the women's team, unfortunately, you know, they had so many injuries, but they're going to have so many people back. I'm going to talk to Sally probably next week. Sorry.
Oh, good.
I told him I totally forgot. I told him I'd have him on, but
no, you should. He's great. He's a really, really quality broadcaster.
He's not second fiddle, but that was my biggest critique for myself this year is, you know, I'm way more in depth into men's basketball and I'm trying to learn more about women's basketball. And it's a completely different sport. Like if you watch it, there's just so many different things that happen in those games and just how schematically they do it. So definitely harder to break down for me because I just don't know as much, but I'm super excited to have him on and just let him run and just hear what he has to say, because I'm sure he's got some great stories as well. And they had a pretty good year. They're getting everybody back. They should be fantastic next year.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah, I mean, I covered women's hoops. I did Michigan State women's basketball for 10 years around the Big Ten. You know, Caitlin Clark was a freshman after freshman and sophomore by the time I finished up there. And yeah, Angel Reese was at Maryland, you know, when I was at Michigan State. So, yeah, I've been covering women's basketball for a really long time. It is different. It's interesting at the college level because the court is the same size, but it plays a different size, right? Like when you're 6'6" versus 6 foot or 5'10", like each step is different. What you can do, what your skill set is different. And that does lead to different X's and O's. And that's what I enjoy. I just love basketball. And so it's just a different style of basketball, better, worse, whatever. You can say whatever you want, but like, it's just a different style of basketball. The players are different. And the other part of it is just the individual. Like Trisha Binford is amazing. She is a Bobcat. She's going to go into the Bobcat Hall of Fame. Like she's going into her 20th year. Like she is a living legend and she is phenomenal to work with. I love talking with her for Cat Chat every single week for all the TV shows. And so, yeah, it's a lot of fun. And they're going to be, I mean, this was a reloading year and, you know, Malia Egan went into the transfer portal. But other than that, I mean, you're feeling pretty good with Jansen and Lamardo announcing they're coming back. We knew Lexi Deaton was going to come back, but they officially announced it. So you've got a strong senior class. You say goodbye to Madison Hall and you say thank you because she crushed it. And then you've got a freshman point guard. You got another point guard coming in and you got some size. Mara Dykstra is only a junior. Like there is some real, real talent on that team. So yeah, I'm really excited for what they're going to do. They survived this year. They had a phenomenal season for what they had, and now they can thrive this next year.
Yep. Hopefully no injuries next year. Just, oh gosh, that was so, it's sad when those just derail a season and just, tough. But last two things I have, we were on standby watch for an emergency podcast. If Logie took off, but we found out he is staying. Gosh, if you're a Cougars fan, you could just kind of hate Montana State with Sprinkle coming over and then Logie stays. No longer really a Pac-12 school, which it really stinks what's going on with Oregon State and Washington State. It just sucks to be a fan base that has to go through that kind of stuff. But
yeah,
you don't have to learn another coach next year, man. You gotta get to know the same coach. And I'm sure there's a lot that goes into that relationship and trying to build that kind of just learning of their players and stuff like that. But now you get another year of continuity. We got one player in the transfer portal, Eddie Turner at the moment, but we'll just see. I mean, I have no idea what his situation is, if he's just looking for another thing, but we'll see with that. But we got a lot of returning players coming back. McMahon will be back hopefully next year. Lekalot will be back. Boy, what a season he had in just development. But just a lot of great dudes coming back next year and super excited to see what we're going to be. So just kind of what was your kind of thoughts going into, I mean, end of the season and just kind of little news bumps. We'll finish with that.
Yeah, definitely excited that he's coming back. I can only imagine what that 24 hours was like for him and his family trying to figure that out. And, you know, yeah, it's not a Pac-12 job anymore. I mean, they're going to be playing in the WCC. I'll be really curious to know what the numbers are when it comes out, because obviously the previous coach was making over $1 million there, but I would be shocked if that's what they were still offering at that point. I would not be surprised if they're trying to cut down on some of their expenditures and that sort of thing. And now they hire David Riley, the Eastern Washington, you know, head coach, which is crazy. And that really opens things up for the league next year. But, you know, for Logie, like, I'm sure they were offering more, but obviously wasn't enough. And, you know, Sprinkle turned down a job after the 2022 season as well. And that turned down for him as well. And, you know, for Logie, like, it took him the year to get everything settled. And now I'm sure he feels like he's going to just dominate next year in a way. And the expectations are going to be high, but now you have your system in place and now you've got guys coming in and they're excited about the recruit from Salt Lake City and the Trap Johnson kid from the South. And, you know, you've got some guys. You didn't really lose a ton. Obviously, you lost a legend in Robert Ford, but, you know, you didn't lose a lot in all of that. So, I'm really excited, and I have no doubt he put the care and the care into that decision that it deserved. And a credit to the Montana State Athletic Department, too, for getting that done. There's a lot of athletic departments that would have said, oh, yeah, sure, go on. We're not going to offer an extension or a raise, like, go for it. We'll just hire somebody at the same rate, like, whatever. So that's a credit too to Leon Costello and the athletic department and everything they're doing. But yeah, I'm excited. I mean, you look at the landscape of the league next year, you know, Eastern loses their coach and Weber loses a draft pick and Montana loses like 800 games worth of experience. I mean, you look across the board here, you know, Montana State should be in a pretty good spot going into next year. So yeah, I'm very excited to see what they do. And, you know, for the guys who are going to be seniors, there's always that little senior bump in their performance when you can see the finish line. So, yeah, I can't wait to see the way that all plays out for him.
Yeah, that's, again, I think I texted you and I've thought about it. It's like, as a fan, you can't fault anybody for going and making more money, because at the end of the day, as fans, this is a business. And business decisions, you got to do what's best for your family. And sometimes taking those big promotions, like I brought up to Foley a couple of weeks ago, I'm like, if somebody offered you, like, Sprinkle's making 16 times what he was making at MSU. Yeah. And it's like, if somebody offers you, you know, 16 times what you're making, it's never going to fault somebody for doing that and taking that. But
which makes me think they weren't offering him the 1.2 no. that Kyle Smith was making. And I don't think they were,
highly,
but like,
doubt that.
If they're basically, if any school offers you $1 million versus when you're making, you know, this is all public, but when you're making 200,000, like, you have to take it, especially if you sign a 4 or 5 year deal. Like, the security you get for your family, for you and your wife, like, your wife doesn't have to work.
That's kids, like, college. That's kids college paid for. That's grandkids college potentially paid for. I mean, that's crazy how, I mean, that's generational stuff sometimes, but.
Right. Which makes me think that that's not what they offered. And makes me wonder. I'm sure this is all going to come out at some point. Yep. I'll be very curious to see what David Riley is getting. And again, it's a credit to the athletic department. It's a credit to the fan base. I mean, how many times did Logie point out the fan base that showed up for that home game against Portland State when they were on the losing streak? Like, that was, I don't want to be too hyperbolic here, but that moment with that fan base and that crowd and that energy and that context, I mean, that could be the reason they went on the run. That could be the reason Logie stayed. Like, that was one of the seminal moments and one of the, like, key chapters in this era that we are witnessing over the last 3 years. And that is a credit to the fans that showed up. Like, that does not happen if people don't show up. If people are just casual about this thing and they're just kind of over it, or like, whatever, it's not Sprinkle, like, and we only had 1,500 there, I don't know that we win that game, because Portland State came out hard. But they were there, and that was a very, very stiff wind into the sails of these guys, and they got it done. That helped spark the run. Obviously, they lost to Sac State after that, but still, like, that kind of sparked things. And they talked about that for a month after that game because of this fan support that day.
The Sac State crowd was great too.
It was 4,000 people.
It was a fantastic crowd. And then we get to Boise. We had the biggest, you know, fan base there in Boise. Looked around. Loud. We had more people there than the Grizz. I mean, yeah. We have our, you know, I think a big part of it is too, when you have your band behind you and the cheer team, that's a pretty underrated part of the experience. That just brought it out. And, you know, the Grizz, they didn't have their band. They just had their cheerleaders there. I mean, when you're talking about energy and how those, you know, those momentum swings in games and stuff like that, just having those extra 30 dudes and girls back there just screaming and, you know, playing the songs and doing the fun stuff during timeouts, that's going to get you up. That's going to get the fans up. That's going to get that cheer section up louder. And I think that was a big part of it, too, is just having that fan support was amazing, especially in Boise. I was stunned that the Grizz didn't have more people because I think it's closer and sometimes easier to get there. But that was crazy. That was something I wasn't expecting while I was standing back there. And there's people who showed up who were like, yeah, I'm a cat grad, lives in Boise, and I just showed up to the championship game because I heard we were in the championship game, and I was beautiful. Like, that's awesome. That was the coolest thing about that.
Yeah, but, no doubt. And you know, I as a baseball guy who grew up, you know, baseball fan and growing up in the Moneyball era, you know, I grew up watching all so much stuff so analytically, right? You know, like, oh yeah, momentum isn't a real thing, but in college sports, momentum 100% is a real thing. Fan base is a 100% real thing beyond just the games, but legitimately, when I ask guys on Cat Chat, football, basketball, whatever, why did you come to Montana State? What was the process like? What did you see? Everybody tells a story about some game day atmosphere that they experienced during the recruiting process without fail.
Yep. I shouted them out last time because I think they're amazing. And it was the only critique. The watch party was really good. It was really well attended for the tournament watch party in Bozeman. The only critique I had was they hired a DJ and they didn't let the in-game stadium kind of dudes who play the music do their job.
Oh, okay.
And so when we were late in that game, when it was, you know, tied, Grambling made the comeback, we didn't have Timmy Trumpets or any of like our signature music bumping. I was like, oh, and it took the, you know, the air a little bit out of the sails, I thought, in that building too. And, you know, that's not the momentum. We're, you know, thousands of miles away from Dayton, but it was just like, oh boy. And then you just have some DJ playing random, you know, pop music. And it's like, come on, dude, like play the hype music, play what we're known for.
Yeah. Because, yeah, we need it now.
Yeah. Even in a defeat, you know, one of the moments that I think about is I came off the press box in the North Dakota State game. I was standing up on the press box and I looked at the guy next to me with about 3 minutes ago. I said, if we win this thing, the field's getting rushed and I'm going down there to rush the field. So I'm standing there in the BAC end zone and it's right as we had punted back to North Dakota State to go to overtime. And the juice in that building at that moment was just uncontrollable. No. You know, I just thought that was crazy. It was just, yeah, it's tough. Yeah, as tough as a game that we lost, it was just insane. And I just think back to that. It was like, this is big time. You know, for an FCS game, this is as big as it gets with this crowd.
I know. And we can be, you know, we can be as excited as we were last year for this year as well. You know, last year didn't go the way we wanted. And there were some low points and all of that, but didn't lose a ton. And these guys are ready to go. They are hungry. And it's Tommy Mellott's senior year. Tommy Mellott is your senior. Brody Grebe is your senior. Like, those two guys, they can carry you a long way. And the schedule sets up nicely with the way it is right now and who's home and who's on the road. So, yeah, I mean, and you know, it's funny, too. I always think about the Atlanta Braves in the 90s with their, like, 14 straight NL East championships. And obviously, we're not at that point. But apathy does set in at a certain point. And obviously, Montana State hasn't won a national championship or anything yet for football, but, you know, there's an apathy factor there when you start to have some success. And the fact that for basketball, we had the coaching change and all of this, like, there was no apathy there this year. There's going to be no apathy there this year. Like, I don't want to be hyperbolic here, but I mean, I'm pretty excited about football season. When you look at what the roster looks like, yeah, we lost a couple of guys, but like, there's guys that are right there. And yes, there's a few Achilles heels here and there, but you know, everybody's going to have that at this level at this time. And with the way the schedule shakes out, I mean, we should be ready to go. We're going to have some fun. People should be optimistic.
Less than 20 days to the spring game. You're right back on it, calling the spring game pretty soon here. I remember last year I moved to Bozeman in May, but I came a little early for looking for housing, and I showed up to the spring game. And I was watching it and I was just like, dude, we got some dudes on this team. That was my takeaway from the spring game. I think Jared White, which is, was awesome. He was a baller in the spring game too last year. And I just looked at our lines and I'm like, our lines look like, you know, big time lines. That's always the biggest thing you hear from the FCS is, you'll never get the linemen for that. And I looked at our lines and I was like, oh, both sides of the ball, we got some dudes. And, you know, most seasons you can look back and say, well, if we had, you know, we had this guy or this guy, we just weren't strong enough, or we weren't big enough, or we weren't, you know, we weren't this or that, you know. We just had some plays just not go our way, and just some kicks
100%.
Not go our way. Yeah, that's how it felt. You know, obviously the Grizz game, but that you don't.
That
get
wasn't
to the Grizz
as
game.
As lopsided as it felt in the moment. Going back and watch, it was not as lopsided. I mean, yeah, it was a blowout, sure, objectively, but that was not as lopsided as we thought.
Clinton McDowell fumbles on the first, you know, possession down the field, and we go down. You know, and if that's not recovered, I mean, there's a lot of what ifs there. But we talked about how what ifs are part of sports. But after the South Dakota State game. So you're an inch away from winning the South Dakota State game if, you know, his foot's in bounds. You're an inch away in the Idaho game. You're an inch away in the Idaho game. Or if, you know, Taco Dowler catches that in the back of the end zone. Or if, who was it who barely didn't tip the ball that Hayden Hatton caught at the end of the game?
Rylan Ord on the game-winning touchdown. He was a fingernail away. He was a fingernail away from a stop and a third down conversion late after we had scored in Missoula, too.
Yep. Yeah, and then there's a couple in the North Dakota State game where you're, you know, you're a couple you're a play away from winning that game and going on to South Dakota, and you know,
right.
a team
and
that
Louis
LeCamp
was not 100% at that point, and that certainly hurt when we were trying to stop the run, and we let up some big run plays in that game. And, but you're right; the point you're making though is a perfect point that people should remember is that you know we're in a moment now where we're not talking about we're not big enough in the trenches,
we're not fast enough. Oh yeah,
we are big enough. We are fast enough. We have enough talent. And last year. You know, now in hindsight, feels like it was built a little bit on a house of cards. That offense just never totally clicked. And I'm part of it's the injuries. You know, Chambers got hurt at the end of the year and Malott was hurt in the middle of the year and yada, yada, yada. How is Malott's health going to be this year? That's a fair question to ask based on how his seasons have ended over the last 3 years. But we're not questioning the speed, the strength, or the size. And the guys have that. And now it's up to the coaching staff. It's up to Vegan. It's up to Walker. It's up to Daly to put that stuff together and make sure that the sum of the parts is more than the individual parts. Because last year, I don't feel like it was. That team was better than what we saw on the field, unfortunately. And that stinks and that hurts. But ultimately, those guys are coming back with a renewed edge, and they're gonna be good. We're gonna have a lot of fun football season next year.
I'm so excited. You mentioned it, the new coordinators, Daly and Walker. We did an interview with Walker. I'm so excited to see what he can bring. I'm so excited. I mean, I feel like people have wanted Daly to be the defensive coordinator for a while now. But what those guys can do on the play calling, what they look like. You got two really talented, you know, young coordinators in the system now. And we'll see what they can do. But I think that's something that a lot of people are looking forward to is these guys are getting their shot and let's see what they do with it.
And that's a part of you know, now we can really see the Vegan CEO of it all, you know. Yeah, there's that treadmill of making sure we've got, you know, 10 or 12 guys we feel good about on the defensive or offensive line, but we're also seeing that treadmill of coaches. Because he does understand where we are. This is the FCS. Like, people are going to get, you can make more money as a coordinator than at the Power Five than you can as a head coach in FCS. That's just the reality and the economics of the situation. So, you know, you're going to lose guys. Like, you're going to lose coaches. And when you win, you're going to lose personnel. And so, to build that, like, pipeline of coaches, we're starting to see a little bit of that now from Vegan, now that we're a few years into his tenure. And I think that part's really cool. And I think the, you know, for Tyler Walker, he, you know, we kind of heard Vegan a few times last year, kind of point him out. But for Daly, like, that guy's a future head coach, you know, and this is his first coordinator job here. And I don't know that he was particularly ready when he first got here, especially learning Vegan system, because it was a little bit of a different system than he was running at Idaho. But you know, he's here now, and he's from Helena, and we know his whole backstory, and now he's here as the defensive coordinator, and there is a deep roster of coaches on this staff, so that whenever a piece of the personnel moves on, there's somebody who can step in, and it's not a titanic or tectonic shift in that. And that is very clearly a focus of what Vegan is trying to run and what he's trying to put together here. And that should make people excited, because, you know, it's not when we see success, it's not a flash in the pan. It's a result of a lot of hard work and a lot of process, and it's not smoke and mirrors.
Does Vegan know he doesn't have to wear a suit to his weekly press conferences every week, or is that just a part of the flavor where he just wants to?
I respect it. That is how you do it.
I think it's crazy. Yeah.
We wear suits on the road. All the coaches put on a tie when we get on the plane. I wear a suit and tie for everything. I am 100% for it. I am anti the schlubification of coaches and all of the things we have seen. And look, you can be comfortable and whatever. And like, I get it. Like, if you don't want to wear a suit and tie, that is fine. But like, nah, man, I am all for it. We should be sharp. We should be clean. And it is a part of the It is a part of the detail that you put into your day and to your life. And when you are well put together like that with a well-tied tie and a well-fitting suit, that means the rest of your day was probably well put together as well. So I am all for it, and I am never going to let a coach outdress me. So good. I'm glad he's doing that, and he should keep doing it, and I'm going to keep doing it as well.
I'm giving you the moniker, the best dressed broadcaster in the Big Sky, because on your little on the YouTube camera for the games, the Keaton cam, as I'm beginning to call it, I've noticed the ties, but I've started to ask you about, you know, how many ties did you pack on a trip, yeah, or what ties do you have?
Always. I will never, ever, ever be the guy who has to go shopping for a tournament run ever, period, full stop. Ever. I have, what did I have? I have one, I'm looking at my closet right now. I have one, two, three, four suits and one, two, three, four, five sport coats or so. And I got like 20 okay. or 25 ties. I mean, I wore a suit and tie when I was doing all the Michigan State games, you know, so that was what our network did. Everybody wore a suit and a tie when we did our games. And now it's part of my process and a part of my routine. And if I was doing it there, I'm not going to stop doing it here. And it makes me feel good. It makes me feel locked in. It makes me feel like $1 million bucks. And it comes out of the broadcast.
Do you have a lucky tie or like a championship tie or anything at this point? Nah. Do you have anything like nothing that's like, hey, the specialty at this point?
Nah, I mean, I do have I have a pair of sport coats that I bought when I had first moved here that are very particularly like Montana State. You've definitely seen them, but the one of them's like it's like gold and blue, like checkered, but like really, really small checkered. And I would never have bought that sport coat if it wasn't Montana State colors, but it's like gold and blue. and then I've got another like window pane, like navy blue suit with like a silver or gray like plaid, like window pane on it. And they're very broadcastery, cause it is a thing, you know, there's a broadcaster yeah. look. It's like, it's this side, it's like the other side of Craig Sager, you know, RIP. So I've got I don't have any illusions about my importance, what I do up in the booth or what I wear, unfortunately, will not make somebody's hands stickier or their spirals more direct. So if I could affect what happened on the field, I would. But unfortunately, no matter what I do, what I wear, or how I handle myself, I'm not going to be able to affect what happens on the field.
All right. I'll kind of wrap it up. I got one more question for you. Coming from Michigan and just kind of living in Montana, what's your favorite thing off season? You know, have you picked up any hobbies out here? Anything that you're just like, I would have never done this before.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not so much I wouldn't have done it before, but now I just have the opportunity more. I mean, I'm a big hiker. I had cross-country skied a little bit before I got out here. I had a couple friends in Michigan that like to do it. So I picked up some secondhand used skis at the Play Against Sports. And so I like to hit the trails in town, which is awesome. I'm a big hiker and backpacker. I grew up in Chicago and I was in Boy Scouts and stuff. But, you know, camping around there, like you drive 8 hours just to get to see some trees. When I was in California, I was Modesto, the Nuts, now Mariners affiliate that I was working for 9 years out there. That was actually only about 2.5 hours from Yosemite. So I would go out to Yosemite a lot for those off days, those single off days. So I've done a lot of backpacking, a lot of hiking. I know people don't like to give their hiking or fishing tips on Cat Chat. One of my favorite questions to ask players when they say they're outdoorsy is like, or like fish is like, where do you like to fish? And that you can always see them, you can always see them picture their fishing hole or their spot or wherever it is. And then you can see them almost picturing other people there and they're not going to give it. And you get the same reaction every time, but it's precious. I love hiking. I'm a big backpacker. I've been all over the place. I've hit many things in Highlight already. I've done the M Trail in Baldy multiple times. Another couple of things in Bridger. I've been up to Glacier National Park already. So yeah, big hiker, big backpacker. Still figuring out how to hike in grizzly country a little bit here and there. But if anybody is a big hiker or backpacker who listens to this and you don't want to give out your spots, hit me up. I promise I'll keep it safe. I'm down to hike with anybody, anytime, anywhere. And I love hiking. I love being in the mountains. And I just love the exertion of it and love the views.
That's awesome, mate. Yeah, no, I'm a legacy at MSU. So my parents both went here. My dad was a big fisher and same way. Won't give out he barely gives me his fishing spots and he hasn't lived here in like 20 years. That's the funniest thing is like, I have to like get on him and be like, hey dude, like Where are you going? He goes, well, you're not going to tell anybody, are you? And I'm like, no. Yeah. It's like, well, I don't even know if I want you there. And I'm like, nobody's fished right there in 20 years.
I love it. It's so much fun, dude. I just love watching the guys react when they realize they could accidentally give it out.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Now, it's not the X's and O's. It's not giving bulletin board material to the rival. No, it's giving out your fishing spot. And I respect it. Yeah, I respect it. And I'm going to keep asking it. Every single guy who comes up who mentions they're a fisher, I'm going to ask just
somebody's
so I can
gonna
get
slip
that reaction.
So, somebody is going to slip eventually.
And if they slip off that versus, you know, how they're going to attack the zone defense next week, I'd much rather have them slipping on that than some X's and O's stuff.
All right, dude, I'll get you out of here. We have a custom on the show with a little Go Cats at the end. So thanks for doing this. Appreciate it. I'm sure you'll be a returning guest at some point, but Go Cats.
Go Cats.
Thank you.